Good morning, Chelveston, Caldecott and Chelston Rise. It's Thursday the 30th of April, and this is Adrian Dale with the Daily Podcast. Now, in yesterday's podcast, I talked about the risks we still face from the virus. Infection levels might be falling, but as one family has found, we're all still at risk whenever we leave the village. Unfortunately, this family now has their second case in the household. They were one of our earliest households affected just after lockdown started. Back in March, one of their two children developed a fever and a dry cough, the classic symptoms. The family went into isolation, absolute isolation, for 14 days to make sure that all the risks would pass and no one else could get infected. Actually, no one else in the household caught it, and they came out of isolation in mid-April, all feeling well. They're a responsible, model family who've stuck carefully to every rule and every piece of guidance throughout the whole lockdown. Since the schools broke up, the children have not even left the village, except for one medical appointment in hospital during the last week. Only one of the parents and one of the children went to hospital, and they stuck to all the rules there, being ultra careful, because no one wants this virus for a second time. So you can imagine their dismay over the weekend when their second child developed the same symptoms in spite of all the precautions they'd taken. So now they're back in isolation for at least another 14 days. They weren't in hospital very long, but obviously they had to come into close contact with the staff. And so it's entirely possible that the infection happened them. And this underlines the danger we're all in. That virus is definitely out there, ready to infect any of us. Some of the German states have started to lift their lockdown, and they've seen an immediate increase in infection rates. So don't be surprised if the government is very cautious indeed about lifting the lockdown. So as you can see, my morning didn't start well at all. However, things got much better when Melvin Wooding called me during my morning beer break. Yes, you heard correctly. I like a nice cold beer at around 11:15 after a couple of hours of cutting the verges. I do get up at 5 a.m, so I figure that waiting over 6 hours for my first beer shows at least some self-restraint. Anyway, Melvin had got some more stories about Canon Roger Davison, which was just what the doctor ordered. However, first I needed to talk daffodils. Now, they look lovely when they're in full bloom, but they quickly become unsightly as they go to seed and die off. And there's a big debate each year about when to chop them down. Some residents get impatient and they cut them down outside their houses in mid-April. I generally leave them until the last cut in May, but even then, I get complaints that I've left them too long or not long enough. To complicate it all, we've got several different varieties in the village that flower and die at different times. I needed advice from Melvin, as he was responsible for donating the bulbs and planting up the Higham Road and the Caldecott Road and the bends into Caldecott. You can recognise his planting by the concentrated clumps and the swathes of colour. My planting always looks rather pathetic by comparison, as I used a post-hole borer and dropped one bulb into each hole, spaced out exactly as it said in the box. Anyway, he's going to be letting me know when he thinks it's the right time for chopping it all down. So blame Melvin. So back to the stories about Roger Davison. I'm sure you gathered that he was a law unto himself, but he was well-meaning at the same time. But he'd been given a huge challenge, you see, to save the church. Brenda has sent me an article entitled A Rural Cinderella, and I'll add a link to this in the daily newsletter. St John's was actually in a terrible state when Roger came, and drastic action was needed to save it. Roger took that action. Now, we all know that Michael Folger worked with Roger on the pews, ripping them out and burning them. And I mentioned a couple of days ago that Melvin had helped on churchyard maintenance. Now, before Melvin joined in, Roger used to do at least half of the grass cutting himself. It was a very hard job. The graves were too close together for the mower to fit between them, and many of the graves had footstones and even side stones. Now, both of these, footstones and side stones, are no longer permitted in a churchyard. But in those days, Roger was forever hitting these with the mower. The job was impossible. Now, I already knew that Roger had moved some footstones, but I had no idea that he'd removed all of the side stones, well, nearly all of them, as well. In fact, Melvin told me yesterday that he even removed some of the headstones that were old and in the way. So gradually, the churchyard was restored. but the pile of discarded memorial stones was growing. Now, when I tried tidying up the graves last year, I got into lots of trouble. But somehow, Roger got away with it. But then again, I suppose he had got God on his side, and I'm not ordained, and I certainly don't own the church. When Melvin joined, Roger actually offered him some of this pile of memorial stonework for his rockery in the cottage. As you can imagine, Melvin was reluctant to accept. You could still read some of the names on bits of the stonework. It all felt rather ghoulish to be robbing graves. Now, I've often wondered why there are headstones and footstones hidden behind trees, or stacked against the walls of the churchyard. Well, now I know. But with the congregation down to 6 people, Roger had the challenge of engaging with the village. And he did this in 2 ways. On Mothering Sunday, he took bunches of snowdrops to all the mothers in the village that he knew about. They loved him for this, and word soon got around so that next year his round was even bigger. And then he decided to act like a village bobby on one day each week. He would pound the beat, chatting to everyone he met and knocking on doors to see if anyone was in for a chat. And of course, he was always open to any hospitality on offer. It would have been rude to refuse, as I'm sure you know. I'm pretty sure, actually, there must be a Bible story about offering a traveller sustenance, and people certainly did this. Melvin remembers him calling round one afternoon, and Rosemary offered Roger a cup of tea. But he looked outside and commented that it was perhaps a little warm for tea. "Oh, perhaps a cold drink then," she said. "Oh, yes, please." Now, knowing that he was fond of a tipple, Melvin offered Roger a sherry. "Perhaps something stronger," said Roger. So there in the middle of the afternoon sat Roger Davison and Melvin drinking scotch. How times change. But of course, the church was eventually saved from closure, which is great news. But how was this achieved? Let's just think. Well, clearly, by ripping out pews, taking up gravestones, delivering flowers, and drinking whiskey in the middle of the afternoon. Now that is indeed an interesting style of ministry. So, Michelle, how does that sound as a plan? I know you're partial to a glass of Prosecco, so perhaps we should all have a bottle on ice just in case you drop by. I know you did an interview for the Evening Standard yesterday on ministry in these changing times. Can you imagine the headlines if Roger Davison had done that interview? Wow.